Welcome to Racing Roots with Ham.
If you don't know our host, David Ham, he's a 25-year NASCAR veteran, engine builder, and jackman.
Live every Monday evening, we have a new guest
from the racing world with their stories, their paths,
their racing roots.
Now here's our host, David Ham.
Welcome to Racing Roots with Ham. In case you don't recognize the voice, this is the Mrs. Tracy, and I am interviewing Mr. Ham tonight. You are at the right place at the right time. So that's welcome, right. Everybody. I've got Bryson to my right, who's going to be my co-host.
Great to be here. Great to be here.
And then we've got the infamous Mr. Ham, still monitoring the cameras. So he's going to be interviewed today, and we're going to put him on the spot. So welcome, everybody. If you have any questions on YouTube, make sure you put a great big Q in front of it so that I can see them, because otherwise there's a lot going on. So far, we've got Sherman Ballard, which is Stoney. He's in the house. Dargan Watts is tuned in. Larry Lackey's tuned in. And the infamous Dickie Dennis. So what we're going to do to begin with is we are going to just get David to give a quick recap of his history into his racing career.
All right. Very good, Tracy. That was an excellent intro. And this is not a roasting session for Ham, by the way.
It may be. You never know.
Want to get that? I like to change it up a little.
Yeah, I just want to get that out of the way up front. I was adjusting a camera because one of them got moved somehow. So if you're listening on the radio and you'd like to see us here live in the Randy Marion studio, you can do so by going to DhamIam on the YouTubes. But hello to our friends out there tuned in. So what are we doing first, Tracy?
Well, I've already done all that. Thank you. But I just want you to talk about, you're the guest today. Okay. So you don't have to ask any questions because the questions are going to be asked to you.
Oh, is that right? Is that how this is going to work?
The tables have turned on the deal here. So we've kind of kicked him out. He's in the same spot, so you know, don't get confused by that.
He still feels he's got control.
Yeah, and he does. Mm-hmm. He's our founder. He's the leader of the ship here. He's the captain of the ship, right? But we come in here week after week, and we always get to learn a lot about new people, and not necessarily new people, but you know, a lot of people that are within our sport. And you're someone that's been within our sport for quite some time, and you know, you spent your whole entire career there, pretty much. So, it's not very often that we and the listeners get an opportunity to learn more about you. So, this is kind of what this night is for: is to kind of let you be the guest and to kind of tell everybody your story and your racing roots.
All right, my racing roots.
Yeah,
my path, my story.
Your racing roots, yeah.
In a quick span, because you guess what? We got people calling in tonight.
Oh, is that right?
Everybody needs to make sure they're listening.
That's
because
right.
We've got some good folks calling in tonight.
Well, I hope you got some good ones and not some bad ones. I mean, what would that be like?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't tell you who I bugged to get the questions.
Yeah, I've already told you who not to bug,
which
but we'll
is
see.
Too bad.
Yes.
I feel like I'm losing my voice, though. What if that happens?
Well, then I can talk over you.
Mm. You do that
Because I already
anyway.
Know your story.
You just did it. See, you doesn't do that very well.
Well, let's talk about you now.
Yes, okay.
Start from the little boy out on the track with your daddy.
Okay, so I went, my very first race that I went to, this is probably a good question for someone anyway, but I was at the Charlotte Motor Speedway, and it was 1970-something, because I can barely remember it. I remember being there. It must have been one of those the Baby Grand National races or something back then. It was because that was the Winston Cup Series, you know, began in 71. But it was a race that didn't have, Cale Yarborough wasn't racing and Allison's weren't racing. But I do remember seeing Richard Petty's car there. So my grandfather lived right down the street there in Harrisburg off of Moorhead Road. So we ended up going to the race. And that's the part I remember, is sitting in the seats. But then from there, I spent most of my days as a teenager going to dirt track races in Carolina Speedway and Gaffney down in Charlotte, Gastonia.
Right.
And, you know, Charlotte back then was Race City, USA, instead of Mooresville, you know, like Mooresville is now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was growing up, it was racing and wrestling.
Yeah.
We had four TV stations. I know you don't know anything about that, Bryson.
No. Well, now you've got like 400 or whatever, but yeah. I've heard about those days, those ancient times.
Yeah, ancient times, yes. I remember when my uncle was 35, and I remember thinking that he was old. So, yeah, and I was, What? I was a
Let's
10,
focus and oh, stay yeah. on point, please.
Oh. See, me and Bryson, we'll start talking about all
I
kinds
know.
Of other stuff.
That's why y'all got me yeah. here.
And I've got the chair over here, by the way, that sinks. Yeah. So I've been sinking this whole time.
I was going to ask you before the show started if you were going to sit in that chair.
Yeah.
Because it looked like it had sunk down to start with.
Yeah.
Hey,
it's okay, though.
You could do me one big favor, if you would. Turn that camera just a little bit more your way, just about an inch. So I spent my days, like I mentioned, going to there you go. That's it. Perfect. All right. And then there was a guy, my neighbor across the street. Okay. So my neighbor, I lived in a little trailer park down in Charlotte, down beside the airport. And my neighbors all seemed to have dirt track cars, as was pretty typical. If you lived anywhere near Carolina Speedway and Charlotte there. And my neighbor across the street had a dirt track car, and his dad built engines for him. He worked at a Ford place. He worked at Ford dealerships. He always wore a shirt that said Ford, you know, it was in mechanic shirts, and his name was Gene Thrasher. And so one day I had, my dad had bought me, I've had two dirt track cars that I never raced, but my dad had bought me like a little Toyota Corolla or Celica. I'm trying to remember what it was. It was like a 1976. And this would have been around 1980 when I had this. I couldn't get it started. It would start when you turn the key, and it would stay running as long as I had the starter engaged. But as soon as I let off, you know, everybody that knows how to work on cars nowadays, especially a point type system, would know what causes that. But as a teenager, I had no idea. So he brings a wire over, and he jumps right from the battery to the coil. So in that type of an ignition system, it starts on 12 volts, and then it runs through a resistor on 9 volts to keep from burning the points out. And he knew that right off. So he had a jumper wire on there. And I was like, that was the coolest thing, that he was able to come over and get my dirt track car started.
Mm-hmm.
And then I noticed, you know, how the person that had gutted the car, which is what you did, you buy one from the junkyard or wherever, a street car, and then you just gut it, cut out the wires and cut out, you know, everything. And that's what somebody had done. They had cut all the wiring out. So whenever I got, that kind of put the bug in me that, and then going to the dirt tracks and seeing how my dad would watching these other guys over there setting a timing on their cars, and he thought that was the coolest thing, and he would haul the car back and forth to the tracks, and so on his old Ford pickup truck. And then I tried to drive it one time, and I was all over the road, like the steering wheel, those things, they would put you all over the roads. So anyway, we hauled a car back and forth, and then so that gave me the desire to get into racing. So I was working as, you know, at that point I was working summer jobs at Carowinds down in Charlotte, South Charlotte. And Tracy's looking at the clock. And we had
a five minute story takes 30.
Yes, excuse me. I'm losing my voice, like I said. So we had worked down there at Carowinds a couple of summers, and I eventually got into food service. Then I just did, all right, you know what? I want to go get a job at a dealership. And that's what I want to be, a dealership technician, which is going to springboard me into NASCAR.
Yeah.
You know, I decided that when I was around 18, thereabouts. And so, anyway, I went to school, or I ended up finding a dealership to work at through my, then I had a, my daughter was born. So she was around 1 year old whenever I decided, or 1 year old. Whenever,
Sense.
Yeah. Whenever I decided that I was going to go to work at a dealership, it was either that or going to the Army, because I had this Sergeant Bull coming after me every once in a while, asking me, want me to come into the Army as a recruiter. And then, so I had an option of going into the Army or working at a dealership and making $6 an hour. And I, you know, with me having that small family, I knew I probably should go take the dealership route.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did, and I went through the automotive service educational program at Central Piedmont, and that was my ticket to get in NASCAR. The first day in my brakes class, the instructor asked, What are you doing here? What are you wanting to accomplish? And I said, I want to get into NASCAR.
All right.
And he's like, well, you know, that's really hard to do. You got to know somebody, mm-hmm. and it's a lot of work, you know, and all this kind of stuff. I said, well, that's what I want to do. So whether you like it or not, that's what I'm going to do. So mm-hmm. what I did was I put my nose in the books. And I was constantly learning, reading, just eat up with everything that had to do with cars, engines, setting up suspensions, everything. Circle Track, Stock Car magazines were my racing thing. I had racing decals on my toolbox and you know, little souvenir cards in my box. Just everything that reminded me That's like they say, when you set a goal, something you want to do, put reminders in front of yourself everywhere, and that'd be your motivation to do it. Did that answer your question, Tracy?
So you need to continue that.
Okay. So yeah. I eventually got a job interview through one of the guys that I worked with at a dealership. I was at a dealership in South Charlotte. We moved out to Independence Boulevard. A new guy come in and bought Reed Oldsmobile. He would name the dealership. Moved out across from the big gold building there in on Independence Boulevard, just down the street from City Chevrolet.
I remember.
So I would see City Chevrolet. I'd see Rick Hendrick all the time riding around. I'd see him riding around in his Suburban with a group of other people in there with him, you know, like we said, whining and dining. And so I was like, man, that is cool. And this was around the time of the city. This was around the time of the Days of Thunder.
Oh, yeah. So that was probably big. That was really big for that.
It was.
Days of Thunder came out.
Yeah. So that was around 1990. And so I would actually go before I got to work. I think we started around 7:30. I would go to a gym out there on Independence Boulevard and work out because I wanted to be a jack man once I got into racing. So I already had that goal set that that's what I wanted to do once I got in. And then one of the, coincidentally, a guy started working at the dealership with me. His name was John Bryan, and he was a jack man for Ricky Rudd. Then one day he got the call from Ricky Rudd that he wanted him to come work for him full time, be his parts guy. So he went, and he was just this weekend warrior at that time. So he went to work full time with Ricky Rudd. So I was constantly asking him, and Tony Urey was another one. You know, he was Earnhardt's Busch Series crew chief. And I would see him all the time, and I was constantly asking them to, hey, get me a job in racing, you know.
Yeah.
But eventually, one of the guys that I worked with at that dealership, his name was Jack Bullock, and he got me an interview out at the, actually wasn't really an interview. It was more like he set me up to go over to Terry Wendell's house to meet him. And he worked over at Savco, and he had been working there for many years. He worked for Petty's. He and his brother, Jerry and Terry, they both worked at Savco. So I got to know them, and they got me a job interview with Jeff Hammond over at the 40 car shop over down right beside the Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Okay.
And so I went and interviewed with Jeff Hammond. I waited in the lobby for 2 hours, ended up getting a letter saying I didn't get that job.
Hey, caller, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
We are wonderful. Can Mr. Ham guess who's calling?
I didn't hear enough of his voice there. Hey, say something else. Something else.
Suicide Hayes, what y'all doing?
Oh, hey, what's up, Sterling? Yeah. I should have known that, yeah. What's up, buddy? How you doing, man?
Oh, we're doing good, man. We're doing a lot of work here in Hayes.
Hey, y'all get any of that, hurricane up there?
Nah, it didn't even touch.
Didn't even touch. Well, I see the pictures and the video from the front porch there. That looks beautiful.
Yes, absolutely.
In a hot tub.
Oh, hot tub.
That's my favorite word, too.
Hey, do you have any David Hamm stories?
There you go. You asked exactly what I was going to.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know if you got any. You used to come out on Sunday mornings, didn't you?
I did, yeah, most of the times.
But sometimes you said one.
Well,
one time was a darling, and it rained. And everybody kind of some of the people get up on top of the truck and play cards. And I took one of the courses down. I took powder out of it and put powder, pulled back in it and took a pair of wood mats on the roof off that truck and out of there. But Big Arvis, he took it back downstairs.
Oh, Big Arvis, yes.
Big Arvis.
Yeah.
I seen it. Reunion things neat. He weighs 4 pounds.
Oh my gosh, yes. That's why he was called Big. That's right. I remember sometimes, you know, whenever I was jacking for the Busch car, I would end up coming in and staying the night before. And do you remember giving me the bullets?
Yeah.
We still have those bullets. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got the Civil War bullets, and they also have the figurine. I think somebody had given you that thing, and then you gave it to me, which was nice.
Yeah, well, a bunch of stuff I got to get sorted out.
Yeah.
East Coast Richmond, they'll find a lot of stuff. I've been hunting about 5-6 years.
How many bullets do you have now?
I couldn't tell you.
Oh.
Probably 1,000.
1,000, wow. Did you find most of them?
Yeah, I found some fans. Fans give you some sometimes, but they give me swords. And I was up Dover one time, and this guy can walk in with a sword, and he's looking at me and says, oh, to hell, I ain't done nothing. And he says, and his family, he didn't have anybody to leave it to, so he said it to me.
Aw.
Yeah. That's nice. What
so,
else have you found? What's the coolest thing you found on the battlefield?
Probably the wings on Flagstaff. I don't know what it was. And boy, Huntsville, man, that's a valuable piece right there. But that's about the most valuable thing I found.
Hmm.
So, Sterling, tell us what it was like to have David working for you.
He's a hustler. He could do that, man. And he's held the mobile too. So, glad to work with him.
He's a good guy.
He is.
Well, he's here.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I told Tracy at the beginning of the show this wasn't going to be a roast session for me.
Nah.
At least I hoped it wasn't going to be.
I wouldn't tell him who was calling. He says, you know I don't like surprises. I said, trust me, you will.
Yeah, that's very cool. Hey, mm-hmm. Sterling, did I ever tell you about the time that I went to Japan? Did you end up going?
I went twice.
Oh, you did go twice. Okay. I went 96 and 98. But I found, did you find you a samurai sword? Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I found myself one. And whenever I went to get on the airplane, of course, I couldn't take the samurai sword with me. You know, of course, you had to go and you had to check everything on. And instead of checking that on to put underneath the plane, I tried to carry it with me and put it in the conveyor belt, you know, to check the bags. And they started freaking out. And they were just saying all kinds of stuff in Japanese. I didn't understand them, you know. And, you know, all these different, like, Japanese police were coming over there. And I'm like, I just bought this sword. I'm trying to do my best Spanish impersonation because that's kind of all I knew. And so they didn't get on me too much, though, but I had to take that sword and go check it in. And I had 0 yen left. Like, 1,000 yen was $10. And that's how much it costs to get back through the gate. You had to pay some kind of little tax thing. And I didn't have it. And the plane was like getting real close to taking off after by the time I got back to check in. And you remember Big Country, Little Country?
Yeah.
Bill Miller and Randy, they happened to be walking by at that same time. And they let me borrow the money to get back to the United States, man. That's, I swear, I feel like, you know, that was God watching over me then, because I was, if you want to see somebody sweating and panicking in an airport, that was me.
Yeah.
Just imagine, David Hamm thinks he's going to have to be Japanese for the rest of his life. I would be panicking too.
Oh, God. Yeah.
You'd be a foot taller on all of them.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And eat them out of house and home.
Yeah. Hey, one of these days, maybe I can bring my metal detector out there and we'll go find some stuff.
I'll sit in the hot tub while you explore.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Hey, how's everything on the farm going for you, Sterling?
I'm going pretty good. Just got to cutting hay and be ready to go farther and hang a little bit.
Yeah, I guess it's about that time of year, hay cutting.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Well, we appreciate you calling in, Sterling. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Absolutely. It has been.
All right. I appreciate y'all calling.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good talk to you, brother. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Bye. Thanks. Bye. All right. Very good. Sterling Marlin.
Well, what do you think about that, Mr. Hamm?
Yeah, Sterling's great.
No, I mean Sterling's the surprise.
Oh, I was surprised. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
Sterling.
At first, I didn't recognize his voice because I...
what to listen for.
No, I didn't. But I wasn't expecting that. I was thinking... At first, I thought, okay, Nick or Amy, because, sort of, you know, the Southern for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then Sterling, because, you know, the time he brought me the bullets and the Civil War bullets, I thought he kept saying books.
Oh.
You know, because he's saying books. He says it real fast.
Civil War bullets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he brought me, he said, so within the next week, he's like, oh, man, I'm sorry, I forgot them bullets. I'll bring them to you next week. you know, kind of like that.
Yeah.
But in Sterling's language.
Yeah.
And
so this whole time you're thinking he's going to be bringing you some books.
Yeah. I thought it was a little bit odd. I was like, Sterling bringing me books, but you know what? If Sterling bring me books, I'll take the books.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So whenever he's like, hey, I got them books. And then he's like reaching his pockets. And then I'm like, for a book? Yeah. Okay. Here you go. I was like, oh man, that's cool. It's, you know.
Yeah.
And then he brought out the Civil War figurine. It looks like one of the generals or something, but it's holding a hat.
Wow.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So let's get back to David Ham's history.
Yes.
And then after we do that, we will get to some of the questions that have come through because we do have questions.
Okay. So the other thing was I went and interviewed with Jeff Hammond. I mentioned that. I waited for 2 hours and I get into the office to see Jeff Hammond. And he's like, you sure are persistent. And I was like, well, I want a job in racing. Mm-hmm. And they were hiring someone to do wiring in the cars and whatever. So I was like, you know what? That's right up my alley. I love the wiring. But didn't end up getting that job. So I got the letter saying that I didn't get the job, but he'll keep my resume on file. Years later, I saw him at the end of Indianapolis. We were there for the Brickyard 400. I think it was around 96. And I said, or 97, whenever he was there. And I said, hey, Jeff, remember me? He said, yeah, I remember you. And I said, well, I'm an engine builder and a jackman. I'm a jackman for Kyle Petty at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, should have hired me. I didn't say that.
Yeah.
But you know what? Things worked out for the best anyway, because instead of getting the job in Harrisburg, I got the job in North Charlotte at Sabco.
Mm-hmm.
And I was living out South Charlotte at the time, but it wasn't too far to go.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't turn out too bad because Jeff Hammond actually invited you and I out to his farm here.
Yes. So we ended up.
So we're still friends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even though you didn't get the job.
No hard
feelings.
Well,
one door closes and another one opens.
Exactly.
And when you've got a burning passion, NASCAR mm-hmm. is one of those things. When you've got a passion, it's hard to stop someone, especially in racing, mm-hmm. to sort of accomplish what they're wanting to do. And you're a good example of that because, with the things with Jeff Hammond not working out, kind of, you know, I'm sure that really was hard to probably experience as much because your passion was strong, and I know how that is.
Yep.
And then when you go to, that doesn't work out, but then you end up going to Sabco, that's mm-hmm. that's a good example of just kind of sticking in there, because you could really have, you know, hung up and said, well, you know, this is not going to work out, but you kept going.
Well, so that's I think by the time I got the letter saying that I wasn't working out, I was already full swing ahead. You know, I wasn't going to wait around too long.
Yeah.
And it's nothing wrong with going and interviewing more than one place, mm-hmm. you know? So at the same time, I was already interviewing with Barry Dodson.
Oh, okay.
And so, that was, like I said, this shop was over on Highway 49. It was closer for me and whatever. So I was interviewing with Barry and then ended up kind of, you know, it was just right after his kids were killed in a car accident, Trey and Tia. But so, you know, I got to tell him, you know, sorry about that, this and that. But he ended up getting me an interview with a guy, the machine shop, the head of the machine shop. His name was Doug Hess. So I ended up getting a job interview with him. And he told me, since I was working at a dealership, he said, you know what, you might be a good fit, because Ken Maroney had just left to go work for Gibbs. And before him, it was Earl Ramey was working in that same position. So he had two great guys that worked in that position that had left to go somewhere else. And then the one main one that he had just had that dealership connection. So that was kind of where how that springboarded me into getting that job. Mm-hmm.
And what year is this? Like, what time are we talking about here?
That was in the end of 94, beginning of 95. Right into the 95 season, we were in transition from the Mellow Yellow car into the Coors Light car.
Okay.
So when I started in that shop, everything was still Mellow Yellow.
Okay.
You know, which was one of the coolest cars, and one of the coolest cars from Days of Thunder movie, too.
Yeah, it's iconic, not only because Kyle Petty, but because of Days of Thunder. So that's awesome.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so I started my first day there, and I was out there with the crew guys, and then Barry Dodson come up to me because I had on a black shirt, and it had Tracy Lawrence, the singer Tracy Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was dabbling in some of the NASCAR stuff back then, sponsoring teams and stuff like that, or sponsoring a car. And so I had his picture on my shirt. Barry Dodson looks at me and said, we're going to have to get you a new uniform.
Yeah.
Which I was like, yes, get me a uniform, because mm-hmm. they had the coolest uniforms. They had the black polo shirts, and black jeans, and it had Savco Racing and a checker flag on the side of each knee,
mm-hmm.
right on the side
really?
Of the legs. And then on our shirts, we had Pontiac, and we had Coors Light Racing, Pontiac on the sleeve, and then Caterpillar on the other sleeve, Cat.
Do you still have any of your uniforms from Savco?
I do. I still have those.
Wow.
I don't. I think I might still have some jeans. Of course, they don't fit me anymore. I mean, you know, that was a medium shirts. No, the shirts fit pretty good.
What? All right, Dave, let's take a quick commercial break real quick, and we will come back and start getting some of these questions. And I think we have another caller trying to call in right now, so you may want to catch it first.
Oh, catch it now.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, let's try it out.
Hey there, go ahead, caller. Oh, you're supposed to do that.
Am I the 10th caller?
You are a winner on the Price is Ham.
The Price is Ham, yes. We'll send your ham as soon as we can get it.
Yeah,
you'll get it in time
go.
For Christmas.
Yes.
All right. Well, I hope I get a trip to Florida out of this, that's for sure.
There you go.
Florida, man.
There you go.
That's where I want to be, Scott.
It's, you want to be in Florida?
Sure.
It's Scott Trevison for everybody that doesn't know, a.k.a. Beer Man.
America's Beer Man.
Hello, everybody. here it's David Ham night on the radio, so it's Racing Roots with the Hams.
That's right.
Tonight. Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah,
and
man.
I'm not roasting him as he was so terrified I was going to. Of course, tonight's not over yet.
Yeah.
Oh, we're just getting started.
Well,
yes.
Scott, I was just getting ready to go into the part where as soon as I started that job, I was filling out my NASCAR license and I was starting to practice as a jackman, and that's the position I wanted.
That's right.
You remember that?
Yep. And my David Ham story is like this. He comes to me and he says, "Scott, I'm going to go be the jackman with Kyle Petty in Daytona 500. I said, "Dude, you know what happened last year?" And I guess it was the guy at the mellow yellow car. His pants were too big and he tried to get across the wall and he kind of stumbled and tripped. And that's what put Kyle back in the pack. And when he got tangled up with Bobby Hill and Jr., remember? So yeah. David comes to me and says, "I'm going to be the jackman." I said, "Dude, let me tell you that. The last guy didn't make it his first race." Me being a newbie over there at Savco, I took the pit car and I'd go over there and practice with him on weekends and get in the pit car and drive all the way up in there and, you know, gas it and brake it. And David would just get his timing down, you know, by himself. And that helped, man. And, you know, sure enough, he became an all-star jackman. Three-time all-star jackman, ladies and gentlemen, David Ham. Just give it a round of applause.
Thank you, man. I remember you doing that whenever you would come into the
studio audience is very happy to hear that.
All right.
Not professional.
I remember when you would come to do with the pit tour, Scott, you would always say three-time all-star jackman David Ham, come on over here and say hey to the people.
And let me tell you, people that are listening all out there on the World Wide Web and live and out there, David Ham was such a shy feller back in the day, man. I mean, he'd almost turn red. And what does that make me do? I'd just pour it on some more, man. Dave, come on over here. Show us what we do with the duct tape, David. And he'd come on over there. It's a Coors Light pit tour, right? And there'd be a guy with a Dale Earnhardt Jr. butt on his hat. I'd say, "Dave, come on over here. Show us what we do with that pit tape." Well, we do a lot of things with the car and everything. And then we go over there and take a piece off, and I put it right over the guy's butt hat. You know, we'd have a lot of fun with that. It's all good stuff.
Well,
but
you were really good at that. Scott was really good at doing the pit tours. I mean,
I can imagine that.
Perfect person doing pit tours, that was Scott.
I would definitely do a pit tour with Scott Trevison. That would be fun.
Mm. Well, Bryson, let me know when I can help you out, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hearing that rumbles that I'm probably going to be coming to the North Wilkesboro race next year. Looks like there's going to be a lot of people going up there, a lot of older folks back in the day. So I'm going to put that on my schedule next year. So hopefully we can see and hook you up, Bryson, next year. And
that would
and
be
all
fun.
That. But first of all, I want to put my thoughts and prayers out to everybody here in Florida, out there in Fort Myers area, Standing Bell Island. Let me tell you, man, it's tough on people.
It's not
I can imagine.
It's everybody struggling over there. And even over here on this side, the debris, it's going to take months for the debris to be cleaned up around here.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to take over there, but I'll let you go. That was my best David Ham story.
You
guys are awesome. You're doing a great job, all of you guys. The teamwork, you know, it takes a team, you know. Nobody's smarter than all of us together. Remember that.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
Well, we love you, Scott, and Jana, too.
Okay, love you, too, and
We'll get down there. We promise.
Oh, by the way, David, happy birthday yesterday. I'm sorry I didn't get back to you.
Oh, wait a minute. Scott's birthday was Sunday. Oh, yes, yesterday.
No, it was two days ago. Yeah, 2 days ago.
Second.
Yesterday.
Oh, today's the third. Okay. Never mind. Gray moment.
Hey, yep. Did you have a good birthday, Scott?
Oh, man, we sat at on the boat, Sea Tunes, got to watch Talladega on the boat because it was live on Fox, you know, so I can get it on the rabbit ears, and it was a good time. Hmm. So
yeah, you said you said enjoy watching the race on your big screen, so what did I do? I pulled out my cell phone and watched it on my cell phone.
Well, I really don't have a big screen on the boat. It's got two little small screens, so yeah, but you know,
yeah,
it's that Kenny Chesney song, you know, for Alabama, you know.
Yeah.
So, Scott, do you have power yet?
Yes, power and water came on last night, so
awesome.
It's been a long week.
I've been thinking about
you. Tell you how many times we was over there trying to save boats at the marina during the hurricane. It was blowing 50, 60 knots, I mean, just honking out of the north, and it was something to experience, I'm going to tell you. It's I don't know how the people over there on the West Coast, but if you know anybody over there, send some thoughts and prayers their way because they need it over there. I got my buddy Rich, a lot of folks that are over there right now.
Nemechek's.
The Nemechek's, yes, they're all over there, and I don't think they got hit as bad as Sanibel Island in the south side, Fort Myers area, but it's just stay tuned to the news. You'll see, and if you want to donate, please donate. Help out those folks down there. They need it, you know, and I can't tell you how many people are over there filling up their gas tanks and going over there and helping out and, you know, just everyday common people helping other people out. It's amazing. You see people do that. And a lot of the gas stations around here don't even have fuel now. I mean, a lot of them, you see, they have bags over the handles. And so, yep. But slowly but surely, life will get back to normal. And they'll always make some more Coors Light. And we'll always be watching Racing Roots with the Hams on 7 now.
That's right.
Well, we're glad you're good and safe. And everything's wonderful for you.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
Thanks for calling, Scott.
See you, Scott.
Love you, mean it.
Love you, mean it back.
Okay, thanks, bye.
Thanks, bye. Yeah, Scott sent me the projected path of that hurricane was going like right almost through his yard at that point.
I know, it was scary. You showed me the picture. Man. I was like, oh, crud.
Yeah,
well, that, another thing about that is, it's a terrible thing regardless, but it's kind of hard to know what to do because the predictions were changing so rapidly. Like, it was originally supposed to, you know, once it went through Florida and kind of went back out to the Atlantic, come back in and sort of hit us a little bit, you know, there towards the end. And it really didn't do that, you know, like they projected. So it was kind of hard for some. I feel like some people that weren't expecting it got it and some that were expecting it didn't get it. So,
yeah.
Either way, it's a terrible situation.
Pretty much the way that worked out. Okay, I guess now would be a good time to take a break.
Yes.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back to Racing Roots with Ham. Well, hey there, caller. Hey, we're back to Racing Roots with Ham, by the way.
I didn't know you had a call. Sorry.
Yes, I still had it turned on. Actually, it was potted up. Hey, who we got on the line?
Hey, this is Stoney.
Hey, Stoney Ballard. Speaking of Florida.
I was just laughing, and then because you people, you know, y'all were cutting up so good.
Oh yeah, man, we're having a great time in here.
I could see that.
The only person missing was you.
We always banter.
Yeah, we do. Always, man. What part of Florida are you in?
We're on the west side. We're right below Tampa and right above Sarasota.
Okay. Yep.
See. Yeah. So Sanibel really got hit hard. You know, I was listening to Scott talk about it.
Right. Yeah. Sad deal. So you, if people don't know, people are listeners, meaning if you were the son of Walter Ballard, who was a 1971 Rookie of the Year. And you and your brothers and Joey Knuckles and others, who others were on your crew? But y'all were like the youngest pit crew.
Yeah, it was Joey Knuckles, Robbie Edders. He worked for a lot of teams and stuff like that. It was me, Clinton, Danny, and a couple times we got to work with Freddie Wilson with Bill Elliott. he was an awesome jack man too, you know, which you probably know. But, you know, we sit there and look back on the old days and stuff like that, you know, from how we grew up and stuff like that. But, you know, it kind of intrigues me on, you know, how we progressed from back then with the heavy jacks to when you got to carry an aluminum jack over the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. But I remember Jeff Hammond, he was our first jack man when, you know, when actually, I'll get into that story a little bit later. But you're getting roasted right now.
Oh, no. That's what I'm afraid of. See, that's what I was saying. We're gonna
a very nice comment I was actually reading.
Yeah.
No, I'm just teasing, you know, because I'm, you know, I'm sitting there looking, you know, I was wanting to ask David, so many questions. And I was like, you know, I walked into my man cave and I said, you know what? I got the perfect question for you.
What's that?
David, it's like if we are, you know, we're on the pit road every day, you know, all day long on Sundays and everything. And you have all these celebrities that are always flown in and come out and stuff like that. Hmm. Who are the two best celebrities that you've ever met in person?
Wow, that's a good question.
I know that answer.
All right. The two.
Oh, really?
I do.
Well,
Tracy, you're not giving me a break here.
My job is to make it hard.
Okay, well, who are the two most famous peoples that you thought personally were your favorite?
Okay, as far as the most famous, I would say, and this is not racing related too, because I mean I could go into that, you know, Junior Johnson, this and that.
Yes,
but Wynonna Judd was one.
Oh, okay, excellent.
She was at Daytona 1 year, and Jeff Gordon was pitted right behind us, and she was in his pits. She had her big bodyguard with her, and so I was like, hey. Can I get you to sign something for my dad? Because my dad was a big fan. I said, my dad loves you. And so she said, what's his name? So I said, Carl. She said, Carl, I love you too. And wrote that on a picture of herself.
Wow.
Are you serious? Nice.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So I put that in a frame.
Wow. That is freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also did Junior Johnson's autograph to my dad too. But I think you're probably talking about actual celebrities outside of racing.
Yeah, exactly. Damn. You know, outside of racing, you know, because, you know, we grew up with, geez, I can go down a list. If I go down a list real quick, you tell me yes or no if you know these drivers.
Well, I know the other guy was Jim Brown, was the ex-Cleveland football player and movie actor.
I met him and I met him and Big Joe Brown. Met them and Chicago 1 year coming back home. That's when I was in the service, and they all signed the football for me because I have, you know, my dress blues and stuff on, because we got a cheaper deal from flying for if you were a veteran or in the, you know, the service.
Yeah.
And they bumped me up to first class, and I got to fly all the way back to Charlotte with them, these guys joking around and stuff.
Nice.
And I was like, well, okay, well, this is a good way to grow up.
Someone had commented earlier on my post that they wanted to hear a Davey Allison story. So I'm wondering if they noticed that since you were going to be on the show, that you were there when Davey Allison won his first race in 1987 at Talladega, his first cup race. And you were the guy sitting on the car with your other teammates. And what was your pose again? Tell everybody that.
Well, my pose at the time, you know, cause you know, I was a radio man and a tire carrier at the same time. So I was the last person that would buckle Davey in, and I would always tell him a joke, you know, to ease him. And, he said, Stoney, what's my joke for today? And I said, quack.
Okay.
And he started laughing, you know, it calmed him down. And then after that, I'd get on the radio and go quack. And he said, "What's that?" And I said, "It's a radio glitch. Don't worry about it." So it was me and Davey's personal joke thing. But when we won, you know, I went, you know, got on the radio and squawked it. I said, "Quack!" And I jumped up on the hood, and everybody else jumped up on the hood. I mean, you know, we had, you know, Tony Lambert, you know, he's Clint, Danny, Joey, had Larry If was on there. Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody just jumped up on it. And I did the initial, you know, I did two fists up. And I was like, you know, we finally won. And everybody says, you know, that's the first Superman pose that we've ever seen. And I'm like, no, it's not really the first one. I said Superman came out last year or something like that.
Yeah.
But that day we thought we were Superman, because that's the same day that Davey's dad, you know, Bobby, flipped and tore the whole fence line down. So we had to wait, and the race wasn't over until like 11 o'clock at night by the time we got through inspection and stuff like that. But you know, when you see that pose, it was like that was just pure energy, and we had it, we had that effect at that time.
So by the time,
anytime you win, you know, something like, you know, Chase won it yesterday,
right?
And you know, that was a good race too.
Yeah.
But I'm not taking nothing away from nobody. If you're out there every day like you are, and how your family is, and you know what you're doing for NASCAR, and what you're doing to promote this stuff, it's like, you know, to me, it's like when I became a high school teacher, I thought it was all, you know, like, okay, well, it's time to just sit down and retire and do all this stuff. But then after, you know, hooking up with you again and talking to everybody from a couple of weeks ago from Mount Airy, it's like, you know, it got the fire burning back in me again.
Yeah, man.
And, I mean, you know, Dave, we love you, man. I mean, you are awesome.
Oh, thank you.
And, by the way, I was going to tell all you and your subscribers, if anyone can tell me what an ERR-21 code is, I'll send them a free t-shirt.
EER what?
21.
EER-21. I'm writing it on our YouTube.
Okay, it has to do with something with Dave working on his lawn equipment. I'll put it that way.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, my. You know that one video
I
did?
I know.
Yes. Oh, man.
Yeah, do you remember it?
That video is actually done very well.
Yeah?
I mean, surprisingly, more people had that issue than I realized.
So, oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, because I used to work for Husqvarna, and, you know, When you sitting there said that, I was like, when you told me what was going on, I said, I already know what's going on with this. But then I listened to it,
yeah,
and I was like, you blew my mind.
it was a definitely odd situation for that to happen.
Yeah. I've never seen that before, but yeah. So, yeah, they get a free t-shirt if they know what you're talking about. So they have to go in, like it, and subscribe.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Thank you for that. What were you going to say, Tracy?
Who was your second person?
Oh, my second person?
Yeah.
Well, I said Jim Brown was my second one.
Oh, that's not the ones I thought.
What did you think?
Gene Simmons.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you met any rock stars.
You should have said that. You met any rock stars. Yeah, Gene Simmons.
I have to give you clues for who your favorite people are.
Well, I mean.
Well,
okay. He's met so many famous people, you know, he's talking to me right now, so
that's exactly
I'm at
right.
the top of the list.
There you go.
You are, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I had to narrow it down, you know. that's why I took out the racing-related part of it, because I didn't, have to mention
that's
you.
That's always a hard spot.
Yeah, you and Junior Johnson,
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, I can tell you stories about Junior, but I'll tell you about that next month. You know, I hope I get to come on your show and stuff like that and tell you some good stories.
Mm-hmm. We'd love to have you.
You're on my calendar.
Oh, man, I'd love to be there. And, you did not say when you got that CPA award, you were the first one to actually achieve that one, weren't you?
Oh, yes, the Good Ranch Leadership Award that I got when I graduated college. Yeah, I skipped right over that, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah, you did. Tell us about that, because, you know, when you and Clint, you know, my brother Clint, Clint won the Randy Owens Award for Mechanic of the Year. That was Kyle Petty's nephew. Not Kyle Petty, but Richard Petty's nephew, you know, when they were charging an air tank up and they used nitrogen instead of oxygen, and it you know mathematics doesn't work out well, you know, so you know it didn't have a good outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Clint won Randy Owens, and you won the good wrench.
Yep.
And I was like, I was so excited when I found out about that years ago that tell us about that. You know, how did you feel?
Okay, so when I graduated college, there was a special award. They said that we've never given this award out, and I was totally not expecting it, but I had my parents there at the banquet. And it was my graduating class. It was
in your suit.
I was in a suit. It was automotive. In a suit for once. And it was an automotive service educational program that General Motors put on down at Central Piedmont Community College in Charlotte. And they said, this is the first time we're giving this award. And it's called the Goodwrench Leadership Award. It's based on leadership. It's based on academic, meaning your grade point average. And it's based on your
attendance,
attendance, and also was chosen by the instructors was the break all.
Did you know about this award?
I had no idea.
Like that they were actually doing it?
I had no idea. They'd never done it before. But they said in my situation, they felt like that they needed to have an award that they created for me. I didn't mention that part to you, Stoney, but they did say that. And they called me up there, and I was like, whoa, really? You know, I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And they gave me a Fluke multimeter that I sent you that picture of.
Yeah, that Fluke 77.
Yeah, it was great.
Man, that's your best friend.
Yes. They gave me that. They gave me a watch that it said Oldsmobile. And then they gave me a, what else did I see? Trip to Paradise. No, I don't know. Something else. Oh, plaque. The plaque.
Man,
that was great. That's good. Time.
I mean, that right there is a you know a lifelong memory that you can always cherish and everything. But you know, and it's like you know your enthusiasm. That's what's going to get you into NASCAR. If you want to be in a NASCAR, you have to have enthusiasts.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, and then you have to have knowledge.
Yep, knowledge and good attitude.
Yep, and then after that, then you have to know somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But the first two things that you have, you can build your own car.
Yeah.
So, right. I mean, it's everything is realistic.
So, yeah, true.
But there was one other question I was wanting to ask you. When you had your first interview, were you nervous? With you know, you said you had your first one with Jeff Hammond.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, especially
sitting there for 2 hours. Yeah,
yeah, that's it.
It seems that it would build up on you, especially waiting for 2 hours has to make it worse.
It did. It made me even more nervous, I guess. But I was also very confident because I knew that's what I wanted to do. You know, when you know what you really want and you know why and everything else, and your confidence,
determination,
there's your enthusiasm.
Yeah.
You know, you just showed what you were made of.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that tells a lot about a man, a lot of respect or a person, not even a man. But you know, if you're enthusiastic about something, you're going to go get it. You're going to get it regardless.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's what I appreciate. You know that you and your show and Tracy and everybody else is doing is like you know you can get this if you want it. And they're like, how can I get onto this? So you have to be enthusiastic about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, how can I pass this grade? You have to be enthusiastic about it. Well, how can I get this? You have to be enthusiastic about it. You have to want it.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Hopefully that's what you tell your students too, because anything that they want, anything that they really want, they can accomplish it. I mean, we live in a country where you can do anything that you want to do.
Well, part of it's wanting being passionate about it. Yeah, anything that you're passionate about, it doesn't feel like you're working towards it.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah, and you have to have that passion. You know, I feel that passion in you. I can see it in some of even your older shows and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And like right now, and I can hear, you know, the passion that's coming out. And y'all've got an awesome team right there.
Well, thank you.
You know,
thanks.
This thing is gonna go big.
We hope so.
I'm out here on my own at Parrish Community High School, you know, throwing a little shout out there.
Yay.
There you go. Hey, but, you did get a comment here. Harlan Swavely says that code wouldn't have anything to do with the defective fuse or a zero turn, would it, on a zero turn?
Somebody went and watched your video.
Yes.
Okay. Send me his address. He gets a free T-shirt.
All right. I didn't even see it. I guess because I had my glasses off.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, man. But, yeah, if I could tell your students anything, that would be exactly pretty much what I just said, that anything that you want, all you have to do is have the desire to do it, and you can go do it, because there's absolutely no reason. So I grew up, and I did not have money at all. I always wanted a dirt bike or a go-kart, but I never had the nerve to ask my parents for it, just because I was like, we don't have any money. I'm not even going to ask,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
in the little trailer parks that we grew up in. And so I could have said, you know, a lot of people that I grew up with ended up going to jail or dead. And I could have said, you know what, I'm not good enough to work in NASCAR or to be a jackman or to, you know what, even saying that doesn't make me feel good.
You wanted more.
Yeah. And I do want more.
That's You're what hungry. I mean.
Gotta mm-hmm. want it. You gotta want it. And that's all that's holding you back is yourself. If you don't get it. What
exactly.
You,
you know, it's like, because you graduated from Harding, correct?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So, we're on the other side of the fence. I grew up at, graduated from North Meck.
I went to West Meck.
Oh, you're the one.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
Redneck.
No, but if you graduated any place in Charlotte, you graduated. So you earn that degree. So you can go out and do anything you want. If you graduate,
pretty much,
you can do anything.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of obstacles, but we both made it.
Oh, yeah. And, I love you both for it. I can't wait to see you guys again.
Absolutely.
And let's see. I think there was something else I was going to ask you, but...
Did it have to do with engine bearings or anything like that? I mean, anything to...
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you since you've been building engines for over 25 years, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so, and you have a lot of stock in your garage that you're trying to build these Fords and Hemis and stuff like that up. You know, I was just curious because... you know, if you have to make your own bearings, because we can't get anything from China or anything like that, you know, how do you get the bearings built with the right size, correct babbit, the thickness of the babbit that goes on the bearings?
Well, you mean as far as if I had to form my own bearing, like if I couldn't get them anywhere, you know, I'd go back to the way they used to do it in the old days, I guess before the mid-50s, they actually had poured babbit in around the crank. And you can see, they used to use like 2,000 shims underneath the main caps.
What would you do?
And what would I do? I'd use bacon or fatback.
Stop it.
Hey, seriously, Tracy, back in the day, you used to pull the tongue off of your shoe, like a tennis shoe.
Yeah.
You'd pull the tongue off of there and cut it off, and you would use that as a bearing.
Mm.
If you had to.
And that would get you home.
Yeah.
But for tolerances, David is talking about, there's no way you can actually get those tolerances correct.
Mm.
It's a trick question.
Well, the babbit in the bearing is like a softer metal, and it's actually, like a filling in, and it actually can absorb, like if it does get metal to metal, it can actually act kind of like a lubricant in a way. And so under that, it's like bronze and then steel, but anyway.
Exactly, and dissipate the heat.
Yeah, dissipate the heat.
Heat's the number one killer.
Yes, heat
is. Not that I'm looking for an engine job. I'm tired of working on engines.
Oh, yeah. yes. I hear that, man.
Well, thank you, Stoney, for calling in.
No, I appreciate you. You know, I love your show. There's a lot of people that I know that supposedly are looking in. I'm not sure if y'all can see that, but...
We
got to get back to school tomorrow, and we've been off for a whole week here in Palmetto, Florida, because of the hurricane.
Right.
And we have friends coming in that's going to help out to go down to Fort Myers. Fort Myers really needs some help.
Mm-hmm.
Sanibel needs some help. Myakka City. They're flooded right now. And, you know, just pray for everybody down here in Florida. We were lucky. You know, we're on a higher elevation. And just want to say, you know, love you guys. Love your show. And I can't wait to see you again.
Well, you can't predict a hurricane, but we're glad everything turned out all right for you.
Well, you know, you can't predict a hurricane, but it depends on which bar you go to and which time of night.
That's right.
I'm just kidding. That's a joke. That's a bad joke. I apologize for saying that.
You're good, bud.
I live with David Hamm. I'm used to bad jokes.
Wait a minute, man.
Come on now. Every once in a while, there's a good one.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you, Bryce.
All right, I love you guys. Y'all be safe. Take care.
All right,
thank you,
Stoney. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Mr. Stoney Ballard.
All right.
Very good. And I'll tell a story about him as soon as we come back. We're going to do station ID and play a couple commercials. And then we're going to get into some of the questions that we have. Oh, I'm doing your job right now.
That is right. You like to always take control.
You're a good guest. You know that because typically guests don't always know exactly what we're going to do. And you could honestly host the show sometime. You would be great.
We might let you.
Yeah.
I nailed it. All right. We'll be right back to Racing Roots with Ham.
And we're back to Racing Roots with Ham. And we want to take a quick second to thank our sponsors for tonight's show. Sponsors tonight is Skip Pollard and Dano McInnes with IMCA Old Timers of Minnesota. Skip was one of our guests a couple weeks ago, and he and Ronnie sponsored two of our shows. So we want to thank you for that.
Skip Pollock.
I did say Pollock.
Yeah, okay.
You said, okay. No, I said Pollard.
Yeah, you did. That's fine.
Oh, well.
Yeah, Skip Pollard.
I wrote it down wrong.
Yeah, that's fine. And speaking of, Ronnie Thomas was there hanging out with us as well. And he says, and enjoyed hearing Stoney Ballard. And he said, we're having a great show tonight. Thank you.
Good.
For that, Mr. Ronnie.
So we can finally get to some of our questions because there are quite a few that came through while we were busy chit-chatting. Yep. So the first question is, what is David's favorite NASCAR moment or memory when he was traveling on the road with the glorious NASCAR circus?
Oh, my goodness. My favorite moment, memory. Okay, I would think that, I'm going to think this, just because this is one of the first things that come to mind, was probably the most memorable was in 1995 when we went to Phoenix, Arizona. That was my first time, actually, that was my first time being on an airplane, and that was like a five-hour flight, 4 hours, something like that. Yeah. And then, so we flew to Phoenix, and I thought that was one of the most beautiful places that I'd ever been to.
I'm still waiting to go.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd love to go back. And so I hung out. I was having so much fun that I ended up staying out really late that evening. And I was actually rooming with Ty Norris, who was our general manager at the time. And I come back to the room probably 3 o'clock in the morning, and he had the door locked. Like the latch was over. Like I had a room key, but he had the latch over to where I couldn't get in. And it was 3 o'clock in the morning, and the general manager's in the bed. So I had to knock on the door to wake him up. And you talk about somebody being so embarrassed. And he just come, opened up the door, didn't say a word. And then I went in there.
He was mad.
Probably so.
Well, what time was it that you woke him up? 3 in the morning. Well,
yes,
I mean.
3 in the morning.
I don't know. I,
you
would,
probably had to
I
get
wouldn't
up at
necessarily.
Six.
Yeah. That, well, yeah. Yeah.
So I ended up just going in there, going to sleep, of course. but I had to explain to him. Not too long after that, I was wanting to be the jack man, of course. At that time, I was doing the pit sign and pulling tires and that kind of stuff, but the opportunity came along for me to be the jack man. So I had to go into his office and just have a little talk with him. But I'm not going to say exactly what he said, because it was actually really cool for him to agree with and understand. He was very understanding about it. So,
well, that's a good thing.
Statute of limitations is not quite
so
up on it.
Was your first race jumping off the fence or the
okay, well, let's go to that.
Yeah, that let's was to me forward. I thought that would be your most memorable moment.
Fast forward to the next time, the Gatorade 125s, I guess it would have been the 125 race, or were they 150s?
Jumping off the wall, that's remember. It
125s, sure. I believe.
Yeah,
the twin 125s, and I was the jack man for Kyle Petty. And
July 4th race, right?
No, Daytona 500.
Okay.
Is this Busch?
February.
Oh, so this is Speed Weeks,
yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
So that's kind of like the duels where the 125s.
Yes.
Okay.
They had them on Thursday.
Okay, yeah.
I flew in on Thursday, and they said, okay, we're going to send you down there. this is what Ty Norris told me. We're going to send you down there. And you know you've been practicing. You've been doing a good job with that. You know, Scott Terrison driving the pit car for me while I get out there and practice. And then he said, we're going to send you down. And if we have to do a pit stop and you do a good job, we'll send you back for the next – we'll send you back for the 600 – for the Daytona 500.
Wow.
Which was a lot of pressure.
Yeah, how does that feel when he tells you that? Because I know that's like your goal, but does that not set a ton of nerves on you? Like, how does that make you feel?
It did, but it also, you know, I already knew what I wanted. I knew I wanted it so bad that nothing was going to stand in my way. I was going
to
do it.
It's always good to have a passion just pushing you forward, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Good.
And one of the things, the other thing that I would do, it was give myself confidence that I had played high school football, you know, and I was like, all right, I was good. I didn't know the rules as much as I should have when I was playing. But I'm saying just at least I would tell myself that I was an athlete in a way.
Well, that allowed you to develop the ability to give yourself confidence and sort of ease some of the nerves, right?
Exactly. Yep. Okay. So I do remember to this day standing on pit wall, and I remember seeing Kyle Petty coming down pit road. Like, I told myself, I'm taking a mental image of this, and I'm going to remember this day from now on, this moment from now on. And I did. I remember it to now. And so
now I remember that was your favorite memory.
Yeah, the pit stop went really well. The pit stop was hammered down. We did good. I don't remember what position we made. We got it, but you know, we did well.
So that shows the importance of, you not only do you need to be physically able to do your job when you're jacking the car, but you got to be mentally there. And, and it sounds to me like you did a pretty good job at that.
The mental part is huge, because whenever you think that, when you start getting too confident, that's when you're going to mess up.
Right.
So I kept that for a long time, until, you know, that desire to do it and not to mess up forever. Even, there's a picture, a really cool picture, that's got Jeff Clark in the background of 1996. And Jeff Clark was the jack man for, he would have been Ernie Irvin then, but he was also the jack man for Davey Allison back in the day. But that was kind of like the guy that I looked up to. I wanted to be like him but you know.
Okay. Awesome. Yep. So next question comes from Larry Lackey. He says, what's your most memorable time working with Robert Yates?
My most memorable time working with Robert Yates was...
besides getting to sing Happy Birthday every month.
Oh, yes, of course. That was, that was good. That was always a good time. I think some people enjoyed it, but other people were like, oh, we don't want to hear that. You know,
those Goober.
Were the, yeah.
Yeah.
Those were the others. But anyway, I think that the very first time that an engine that I had put together won a race was Dale Jarrett, when he won, going back to the Gatorade 125s. I think it was actually a 150 then. They changed it at some point. I'm trying to remember when.
I think they may be 150s now.
Okay.
But I don't know. Yeah. I mean, but the 125 also, Gatorade 125 sounds right. So there's probably a point. Because now they're called the, you know, whatever the sponsors, Blue Green Vacations or something, duels, and I think they're 150s, but anyways,
I mean,
go ahead.
Of course, we were a team and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, just the fact that I was the last one. I was the one to assemble that engine. What meant a lot to me, and to see, you know, Robert Yates, you know, building for Robert Yates was the one that I actually stayed away from for a long time, because I never thought that I could build, let's say, to that level. I mean, I was, you know, I built Chevrolets for many years, and then I was like, every time I heard about the Fords, I was like, well, they work a lot of hours for one thing. But, you know, hindsight, I should have jumped on over to Robert Yates Racing many years before. You know, I knew Nick Ramey since I started in NASCAR. So I probably could have gotten a job over there at some point.
So I was going to say, another part of that is not so much Robert Yates himself, but working for Robert Yates for, you know, what have you, after you retired and Doug came on the show and just sang your praises. I think that was another one of your most memorable moments, not so much working with him, but having worked for him.
Yeah. Well, that was huge whenever I had Doug on the show, and that was much appreciated. But also any opportunity I had to talk to Robert Yates was gold, you know, and I'll remember telling him that, you know, I rode my bicycle by his shop whenever he worked down at Diegard, you know, back in the 80s, early 80s. And I said, and the first thing he asked me was, do you remember the engine running? And I'm like, yeah, I remember hearing the engine running while I'm riding my bicycle by there. And then he just pipes up, you know, like he's excited, you know.
Of course, that's what they drive, you know, that's what drives them.
Yeah.
But Robert, even when I met him, when we went out to his farm, he actually remembered my mom.
Yeah, that's true. He remembered
her.
So,
yeah, he remembered my mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was nice.
So the next question comes from Brian Goodwin. He says, when you were building engines, were you responsible for parts selection and development of the engines? What about being innovative with the rules? How much freedom, if any, did you have? So it's a two-part question.
Okay, so as far as the parts and stuff, we every place that I worked back in the day, whether it was Sabco or Carl Wagner, we had the head engine builder, I guess you could say, or the owner of the team was responsible for ordering the parts. And I remember David Evans one time told me, he said a head engine builder is just a glorified parts man. Like he knew what parts to order, what parts to get. So, you know, there was times where I could choose what, if I wanted to run a Bryant crank or a Crower crank, you know, that type of thing. Other than that, as far as actual ordering the parts, that was pretty much out of my hands. And I was kind of glad of that.
Well, I remember seeing you grinding your rings down. I actually helped you grind some rings down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that engine didn't make it. But anyway, no, I'm kidding.
Oh, come on now. I didn't do it at the shop. I did it at home.
No, I'll let you rough cut them for me. Yes, for sure. All right. The second part of that was what?
Second part of what about being innovative with the rules? How much freedom, if any, did you have?
Okay. At some places, I had more innovative freedom. And years ago, I was able to do that. And what I would do is I would try different. You know, one of my biggest things was in the ring package. I would try different things with the rings and opening up gaps or tightening up gaps or doing different things like that. And kind of just not telling anybody and just seeing how it ran on the dyno, seeing how it did. And then I would do other things, like I was building the qualifiers for Joe Nemechek back in the day. He was known as the Front Row Joe back then. But that was like probably one of the highlights of my early career.
What year did you work for Joe Nemechek?
97, 98, 99, until actually Kenny Irwin was in 99, I believe it was, or 2000, something like that. He jumped in that car.
So for 3 years.
And I was building, and I also built some for Sterling and some for the race engines and things too. Back
while
then,
you were Jackman for Sterling.
I built some for the 46, yeah. I remember one in particular I built for Atlanta, and we ended up finishing eighth.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I was the Jackman for that car, so that was kind of cool. I think it was a 90.
Double dip.
That is 90, cool 99. To have your engine on the car that you're jacking.
Yeah,
that's actually
double
pretty
dip.
Neat. When you're back in, so then in the 90s, when you're building engines versus in the 2000s, is there a big difference between not just the engine, but like the rules that you have? Like, are engine builders presented with these certain rules and areas by like NASCAR? And how is that? How did that evolve? Because you, like, while you were in racing, was a big time in the evolution of, I guess, rules and leadership within NASCAR. So how did that work out?
Yeah, one of the biggest things that they did was they had different weights that you could run. You could run a certain gram piston. You couldn't run any less than like 400 or 500, and then it was like 425, and then it was, you know, then we had different rods. You couldn't run any. You couldn't run the. Or we had restrictor plate engines and we had open engines. And back in the day, you didn't have like a minimum on the restrictor plates. You could do a lot of, you had a lot of flexibility on stuff, but you couldn't do a lot with it. The intake manifolds up underneath the carburetor. Well, actually, I take that back. See, it goes through the different years. Eventually, they made the rules where you couldn't do much underneath the carburetor. But back in the day, you had like these tubes that Larry Lackey would make, and I did a lot of stuff on the intake manifolds. That was more of their department. But the things that we could do were running lighter stuff in a lot of ways. But then eventually in the 2000s, NASCAR said, okay, with this, you can't run the lighter stuff. And then again, they changed the restrictor plate package. And then they kind of made, to save money, they made everything to where it was like you run the same short block as you would run in a plate engine as a open engine. When I say plate engine, that means the restrictor plate. You know, the big super speedway tracks, they put restrictor plates on them to keep them the speed down.
Right. Man. And is that when the restrictor plate came in? Obviously, that changed a lot. But is that the reason for pack racing, or is there restrictions and the things that changed after restrictor? Because it feels like
first couple of races for several years with restrictor plates, you still didn't have necessarily pack racing.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, like today, you know, you think all the cars at Super Speedway seem pretty even. So as an engine builder, how do you kind of prepare yourself for that? And there's not a lot of room.
I think they started doing that restrictor plate around, let's see, 87, whenever Bobby Allison got in that really bad wreck at Talladega. So then they said, we got to do something to slow these cars down. I'm sure they probably had some type of deal maybe before that, whatever. That was a little bit before my time as far as getting into that. But what was the rest of your question?
Well, I was just asking, like, as far as pack racing, mm-hmm. because at first you would build an engine for a car that wouldn't necessarily be in a pack for the whole race. So, because, you know, the old Talladega Daytona races, they were spread out pretty much, and they got that way pretty quickly. Now it's very aerodynamic, and that kind of, I would say that change happened in the 90s.
One of the things that really helped us at Roush Yates was we got it to where, especially when we got into the FR9, we were able to run the engines a little bit warmer, a little bit hotter, I guess you could say. And that was part of the problem whenever you're pack racing, you know, the second car in second place, you'd start seeing steam, you start seeing it shooting out the overflow because they would start getting hot because they didn't have the air going through the air intakes.
Right.
You know, in the front of the cars to cool the radiator. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the airflow. So they would actually, we started being up on the FR9, we were actually running it a little bit warmer. You know, you always hear about them taping up the front. Right. The front of the cars.
Mm-hmm.
You could run a little more take. You could run packing and not worry about so much about the car overheating, which could actually help you in your speed as well. Because you also, when you're out front, if you don't have quite as much air going through the grill, you have it going over the car, you could run a little bit faster too. So we had an immediate advantage with that FR9 over everybody else. Everybody else was having heat issues, and then we just went out there and, you know, qualified first and second, and then just won the race, and then kept on winning a lot of races from that.
All right. The next question is from Leland Johnson. He says, David, which did you enjoy the most, building engines or being a jackman?
I enjoyed.
That's a great question, too.
That is a great question. It depends on a certain point. So when I started as a jackman, even when I was working, I started out working in a machine shop in 95. And the first thing I was doing was over there, I was filling out my application. I wanted to go to the racetrack. And I remember neglecting one of my machines was running. I was doing lifter bores, and I had switched from the drill, the dreamer, whatever, the drill. And then I switched over to a reamer, and I didn't slow the speed down. And so the reamer's over there automatic feeding down, and it's making a lot of noise. And my boss was like, hey, you got that on the wrong speed. And I'm over there filling out my application to go to the racetrack. He did not like that one bit. He didn't want me going to the racetrack to start with. But I did the jackman. But it was almost like having two separate jobs. I would work during the week. I would work a lot of hours doing building engines or machining. And then I would go to the racetrack over the weekend, and then I'd come back on Monday like a zombie. I always said I was like a zombie from Monday to Wednesday. But to answer that question,
that robot mentality that you have.
Yeah, that's it. Just keep going.
You're working 7 days a week pretty much, right?
Yeah, I used to say I was working 8 days a week.
He still thinks he's a robot.
But I do. It's hard to lose that. It really is. But I would, but when I got off the road, I was happier as an engine builder because I was like, man, what am I going to do with this extra time? So then I was like, well, I'll just start a business, you know, and I can just do that. And so I would go and mow at lunchtime and mow after work. And
this was many years later, but in your spare time, you would build engines for other people.
I was go-kart racing. I was playing softball. I was riding four wheelers all the time. I mean, I was coaching baseball, coaching two travel ball teams, baseball, football, basketball. I was always going, go, nonstop.
So Scott Trevison says, the five most famous people he's met in racing are George Jones, Tom Arnold, Robbie Neville, which is Norm, from Cheers, and Dickie Dennis.
Oh, and Dickie Dennis, there you go.
Don't forget the infamous Dickie Dennis.
That's right. Hey, Dickie. You know what? Speaking of George Jones, that was one of the things Sterling said one time. I believe we were at Talladega, and he said, I think he had told us that George Jones was coming. One of the races, he said, George Jones coming to race next week, you know, like that. And but he ended up having a bus issue or something, so he didn't show. You know, he was known as No Show Jones. So I never got to meet George Jones. I wish I'd had. But he was friends with Sterling.
So Jim Dooley says, David, if you had been sitting with Dickie Dennis, would you have climbed the fence with him?
No.
I can answer that easily. No.
Absolutely not. I would have
David
actually
does
been
not like,
heights. No, I wouldn't do that. And I would have been like, hey, Dickie, come on, man. Let's let this person go.
Yeah, I was thinking if Dickie was with David, Dickie may not have climbed the fence.
Right.
But I don't know, though. Dickie's got that mentality, well, too. He's going to do it.
Yeah,
he's
true. Know, regardless. David, yes. David would have probably egged him on, to be honest.
Hey, go up here. And, yeah.
Go for it. Go for it, man. You'll be all right.
Didn't Jana have a question?
I already asked Jana's question.
Oh, did you?
Thank
okay.
you. I'm under control here, mister.
Okay. All right, well. Good job.
I had a few questions just coming in on Facebook. The first one was from Philip Church, and you know, you've talked about your favorite memory within racing, but he wants to know, like, let's take one race day, just to, you know, a general race day. What was your favorite part about a race day, and you know, being at the track?
Okay, my favorite part of the day was when that checker flag flew, or whether we won or not.
Yeah.
Besides the plane ride and a nap.
No, actually, I'll take that back. Whenever we got on the airplane to go back home, no, it wasn't that bad. That was a long day. Mm-hmm. I say it wasn't that bad, meaning that wasn't my favorite part of the day.
I still can't imagine you.
It was when I got to the racetrack and I walked out there on pit road in the morning, and we're pushing the pit box out, and it was about, you know, 7-8 o'clock in the morning. And there was like hardly anybody there. We're setting up. That was always a very peaceful time, you know, to be at the racetrack. I enjoyed that. And then it was just the grind after that to get up, you know, go and work on the car some, set up the pits, get over to the car, set my jack stop height, you know, and cut off that stob. Like I learned my lesson at North Wilkesboro in 96.
With Kyle.
Yeah, with Kyle. Speaking of North Wilkesboro in 96, that was the time whenever they made the video for the NASCAR 98.
Yes.
Video game. We figured that out.
Yeah, we did.
You found more video of it.
Uh-huh.
And David's on that video game.
Yeah, that
so
was pretty interesting. The NASCAR 98 may be the most famous NASCAR video. NASCAR is pretty cool because the NASCAR video games, especially in the early 2000s, were super popular. That's when, like, your Madden NFLs are coming out and everything, but NASCAR is right in there with it, with EA Sports. And so NASCAR 98 was one of the first that was kind of like, you know, very popular and stuff, which is, it's really cool to see now. And that you're on the cover, that's even cooler. So
yeah, I think I bought my sons that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I got a free copy. I'm thinking I did.
Yeah.
That, and Kyle Petty had some No Fear Racing. I got several of those games. That was on it was on one of the PlayStations or whatever. But anyway, wasn't I answering a question? Oh, 96. Yeah. But that was when I learned to cut that jack stop off the left side, because I come around the left side of the car, threw the jack down, and it went dunk right against the car, right against the jack stop that I had not cut off. So on a short track, you know, like your tire pressures get lower and the car sinks a little bit, the springs heat up, all that kind of stuff, the car settles, and the jack would not go under there. So took it, had to use a pry bar the rest of the race before I come around. Andy Stapp would be over there with a big pry bar and lift the car up, and I'd stick the jack under. And that was the way we had to do it. From then on,
fun
I cut
times.
That stop and marked it with the tape.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Jim Dooley says, what will be your next challenge?
Oh, did I answer that last question, though?
You did.
Okay,
yeah.
Good deal. What would be my next challenge?
Mm-hmm.
My next challenge would be to be on the radio and to have my own show. See, that was a challenge for me, and I never thought I would be on the radio. I never thought I would have to be able to even do all this stuff right here. But as far as my next challenge, that is a great question, because I really don't know.
I know what it is.
Keep growing.
Keep growing, yeah. Keep this show growing and to make to where it actually, you know, I want to continue doing what I love, and I want to continue, you know, preserving the history, racing history and that type of thing. But I want to be able to maybe make a living at it somehow.
True.
You know, that would be a way to pay the bills.
To become mobile, so you don't have to stay in one place.
Yeah, that too, I suppose. But just being, yeah, make it monetized somehow.
So Stoney says he forgot to ask when he was on the phone with you, what's your fastest pit stop and where was it?
Oh, okay. Where was it? I'm thinking that... So I was, we were talking one time, and I was trying to remember what race it was that Jimmy Spencer beat us at the checker flag, right at the start finish line. Jimmy Spencer won the race by like a foot, and he beat us. This was with Nemechek. We always had very good fast pit stops whenever I was the jack man for Nemechek in the Busch series. So we would go to the tracks, and anywhere that we had a cup race at the same track, and it was the bigger tracks typically, Nemechek would also run in the Busch race. And if Sterling wasn't running, then I would go and jack for Nemechek. And we would have like some mid 14 and a half second stops, maybe 15 there. But we would come in like, if we come in like 15th place, we would come out leading the race. I mean, it was the coolest thing ever. Mm-hmm. And we did that at Charlotte. If you can go back and watch a video, I don't remember if they actually showed our stop, but they did show us coming out in first place.
So it was about 14 to 15 seconds.
Yeah.
And that was pretty fast back then. I think, if I'm not mistaken, now it's gotten a little bit quicker
A lot.
Yeah.
But that all has to do with the single lug cars.
Yeah, and, of course.
You know, that has a lot of effect. It kind of takes away the comparison now. You can't really compare crews now. Like a year ago, you could have said, well, because they're still changing five lugs and they're still jacking the car pretty similarly. And now it's just totally out of the question with the single lug. And
it is.
That's how do you feel about it being so fast now?
Well, so back then we had different factors. We had brake dust as a factor. We had bigger tracks. You could tend to be a little bit faster because you could set the chains tighter on the car. The chains meaning when you jacked a car up, there was chains on the rear that held the rear end housing that would pull it up. Mm-hmm. Pretty quick. But on a short track, you had more chain. Like if you ever watch a video of me jacking, you'll see the left side of the car, I'm hitting it like 3-4 times.
Yeah.
But in a short track, not a short track, bigger tracks.
One or two.
And then it's up. And but then the tire changers are hitting the lugs, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, you got brake dust flying everywhere, those kind of factors. Well, now they're just hitting one lug, and the pit stops are so fast. You know, they've talked about taking away the jack man. I don't know.
I was just about to ask you about that because that made me think about like Formula One. I don't know about IndyCar, but Formula One's got the jacks that just come out from under the car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if NASCAR resorted, because here's what NASCAR's doing, and I've been, if you've seen me on Twitter like in the past week, I've been, you know,
fussing about
NASCAR, and rightfully so. I mean, I think we should all have that right. It is America.
Yes.
But NASCAR makes too many decisions that are based on other racing industries, I guess, meaning Formula One, IMSA, IndyCar, those type of things.
Right.
And they're kind of, to me, in my opinion, they're forgetting that they're NASCAR. And so, you know, we shouldn't try to be like these other guys. We're set apart.
Right.
But they don't seem to understand that. But one of the things when the single lug came out, they're thinking, okay, well, this is like Formula One. This is like IndyCar. What about the automated jacks, the automatic jacks that come out from under the car?
Yeah. That'll be next.
You know, Formula One, and I don't know if NASCAR will do that, but how do you feel about that? What's your opinions?
I think
we all know. But
I think they need to leave it alone. I mean, they've already done it, you know, changing to the one lug. It's already bad enough, I guess you could say. I would have just left it alone altogether, but I guess that does take away, you know, one of the things. Now, they were having issues with the tires coming off, but
yeah,
maybe they've got that fixed.
Well, and see, one of the reasons that they said to go back, the reason for switching to a single lug was all the tires will be easier to put on, easier to, you know, kind of stay intact. And we haven't really seen that. We've had more of an issue with tires coming off this year than we have in years past with the five lug nuts. Mm-hmm. But one of the things about the pit stops in NASCAR is that's one of the things that sort of gives it NASCAR an identity is the pit stops. Like, say you take someone to a race for the first time, that's one of the coolest parts about the race is watching the crews jump off that wall. Jackman comes around, jacks the car up, bam, 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 change the tires, put them back on, go to the other side, and it all happens in 15 seconds. And then people are like, wow, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But you're kind of erasing your identity when you do that.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that.
And, and you're also taking it away from a lot of people because, you know, we need crew members like that. NASCAR is not just driver and, you know, it's
team owners.
Yeah, it's you got to have that crew, and they're kind of erasing their identity with that. But it's people like you that make the sport go around.
Mr.
H.
Yes. Mr. H, there you go. Well, you look at this too, you know, look at safety in a way. You got to wonder if the way they're doing it now is just as safe or not, because now everybody on that crew, it's like you're constantly moving. Like, a, you mm-hmm. know, back in the day, I would jack the car up. And I still had a little bit of time to look around and see the front guy, back guy, and then grab the jack and go. Well, mm-hmm. now they're jacking the car. Somebody else comes over, puts the tire on. Somebody else grabs the jack and goes around. And, I mean, it's just all, like, constantly bam, 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 bam.
Yeah.
There's, 5 seconds.
There's no, yeah, there's no time to think, really. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't much before because you're still doing it in, you know, 15 seconds, whatever. But yeah. there's, you know, it's a little bit calmer, I guess. But yeah, you gotta remember those guys.
Yep, there you go. Yeah. Scott says my next challenge is my harmonica career.
Yeah, let's get to some of these questions because we actually do have several good questions coming in. So we've kind of touched this before, but someone asked, why did you get out of NASCAR? Why did you get out of racing?
Well, probably the number one reason was I was my dad has got Alzheimer's, so my parents live with me, and I wanted to be there for him more. You know, because there was a lot of times where I was working and I was putting in my 40 plus hours, you know, and I was like wondering what he was up to. And I know, you know, that's life too, but I felt like I was at a position. I had started my own business. So I was at a position where I could do that. Then I could go to where I'm working and working my own hours.
Yeah. And at that time he wasn't getting lost like he was.
Yeah, right.
So it was a good thing that you were home.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, next question is, how and why and when did you get into radio broadcasting? Stephen Presley's asking that.
Oh, about 5 years ago, I was, and the why, I've always kind of been interested, I say always, meaning over the past, since I moved to Statesville, I guess I should say.
Go back to your daddy.
Oh, yeah, my dad used to always tell me he wanted to be a radio DJ for one, and he would go and hang out over at the radio station there on Highway 16.
So part of it was because you wanted to make your dad proud by doing something that he wanted to do.
Yeah, part of that. So every time I would go on the radio, you know, I always felt like I was, I think my dad was pretty proud of that. And, mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, that was one of the things. And then I got to where I felt like it was a challenge. You know, I wanted to learn the technical side of it. I wanted to be able to do this. And so.
David likes being in control.
Yeah, I like to control things. And it's a challenge for me,
it
too.
Yeah, everything that when you talk about racing, mm-hmm. you're overcoming challenges, and every time you seem to find a new one. Mm-hmm. And so this was just a new one. And
it's just expanding your brain, making your mind work more.
I love things that make me think. And then the more that I'm back here, I'm always trying to find different ways of having different camera angles and different, mm-hmm. you know, trying to one-up or whatever, trying to make it better each time. So that's kind of the way.
It says, tell us a good story about you and John Bryan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, a good story about me and John Bryan. Okay, so John Bryan worked to get the dealership with me, the same dealership there on Independence Boulevard. And he come in there. He was driving his red Chevrolet Lumina, probably a 1990-ish. But his was more like the sport package Lumina. And he had on his tag, he had Jackin number 10, J-A-C-K-N number 10 on his tag.
Uh-huh.
But he would have me, I was a tech, so he would have me change, I would change his oil. I did that. I would change his oil and, you know, rotate tires or do any of that kind of stuff. Because mm-hmm. he was the parts guy. He didn't really know how to do all that other kind of stuff.
Oh.
Yeah. But John was a great guy, a great personality. And, was a really good friend. We always had a good time, but his hair was always perfect, even at the racetrack. So when I started going to the racetrack, we sat down on the airplane one time and he's like, did you ever think, he said, look at this, we're sitting here. You're the jack man for Kyle Petty and I'm the jack man for Ernie Irvin. Did you ever think that we would do this? We would be here. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of did, but I didn't realize it would be at this level, you know?
Right.
I mean, it was like a really cool thing.
It's not that you knew, it was that you hoped. That's kind of what you aspired to do.
Well, like I said, anytime I wanted to do something, I just went for it. And but yeah, I was like, that was a pretty cool moment for us. But they would always be late. He worked on the Haviland crew, and they would always be late, even after they won a race or whatever. Last ones to get on the bus. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
The next question is Jim Dooley. He says, we know your greatest accomplishment was graduating from CPCC. Do you think there could have been any better school for you?
Oh, any better school than Central Piedmont?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, there's...
It was affordable.
There's a, what is it, MIS or whatever, or MIT, I'm sorry, I don't know why I said MIS. MIT was a, I mean, for me, I think Central Piedmont was absolutely perfect because I had already been going there when I was in high school. I was behind in math. So I was already taking classes before I even knew that I was going to be going Central Piedmont to start with. And that was, I was taking geometry. I took geometry twice. I hated it. Absolutely couldn't stand
me
it.
Me too. I have that issue.
Then I started taking algebra 2. I went to college, excuse me, to take algebra 2. Well, it turns out whenever I ended up going to college, I didn't really need it, but I passed it. I mean, I did good. I was trying to catch up thinking that my senior year in high school, I wanted to at least be where my other friends were. So turns out I ended up getting my diploma from Central Piedmont. Wow. Because since I had my daughter and I was in 11th grade, my girlfriend got pregnant. See, I've always done things backwards.
Yes,
girlfriend
you have.
Got pregnant. Then I graduated college. I graduated high school. Sorry. Then I had a baby. Then I got married. Then I graduated college. You know, it's just like, whatever. But it worked out. So that was it.
Very good.
All right.
Very good.
So Jim Dooley says, do you have a Sterling Marlin story?
Well, my Sterling Marlin story, my main PG. One is the, the one I've already told was the books, about the books.
Oh, yeah.
The bullets, the books. Yeah. If he wasn't listening earlier, but that was my... probably my main one, but another one, you know, whenever this is after I was already gone from Sterling, but whenever he got out and was pulling that fender.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. That is the coolest thing. I was just, I think I was just talking about that with Dad the other week.
Yeah.
That is so cool. Cause he just gets out and it's on live national television.
Yeah.
Sterling gets out of the car and he's just like, well, I'm, you know, red flag, let's pull the fender out. And, it's funny because we all know Sterling, and it's knowing that, you know, it's Sterling. It is one of the things that makes it so funny, but it's just, it's great. It was awesome.
Well, they were talking about that at the reunion.
Yes. His father was telling the story. So I got that video of his father telling that story, and he's like, no, what are you doing? Don't do that. You know, it always makes me think of that movie.
Talladega Nights?
Forgetting Sir Marshall. Whenever he's like, what are you doing?
Oh,
stop.
Yeah.
Talking to
Yeah. That's David's favorite movie, by the way.
Oh, yes. He's like, no.
That in Couples Retreat.
Anyway, yeah, that's funny stuff. But anyway, that was, Sterling, I asked him about it. You know, I was talking to him one time on the phone and I asked him about that. And he said, I really didn't have much choice. I mean, if I wouldn't have done it, I'd have cut a tire. So,
yeah.
I mean, I just had to just get out and do it.
Yeah.
Take the penalty.
Sterling's
great, though.
Yeah.
So Jamie Mead says, when are we going to have Sterling on the show?
That's a good question. I was actually hoping to have him on this evening in person, but you ended
but
up stuck happen. With me instead. I'm sorry about that. But
at least we got to hear from him.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got to hear from him at least. So that was thanks to Sterling for calling in. That was great. And but hopefully maybe by the middle of October or into November. We're kind of waiting on one thing to happen, and then we're going to make it happen here too. So, yeah, he's already said he's going to come on. We're just waiting on this other thing.
Yeah.
Trying to get two birds with one stone is
what
we're trying to do while he's out here.
Well, it's a trip from Tennessee over here. So, you know, we're right there at it where Sterling's at. So
that's right.
When he comes down, it's going to be a great thing, good opportunity, and a big deal. So
yeah. That's right.
It'll be fun.
Well, he's invited us to visit them, too, so we may do that as well if he can't make it down here sooner.
Yep. And they're talking about my banjo there. I did pull my banjo out of the closet and put it in there.
I heard.
Yeah, you heard me the other morning.
I did.
I was trying to remember Cripple Creek, and I'm sitting there, like, struggling a little bit. I'm like, man, it's been so long since I played it.
It sounded good.
I'm going to have to get back to it, for
it
sure.
It still sounded good.
Yeah. I make time every day to practice. That's
so there's your next goal, Grand Ole Opry.
And I saw, you know what? I played at the Grand Ole Opry, and I played my harmonica, as I think Scott mentioned.
I think you might have told me that.
Yep. So I actually played the harmonica at the Grand Ole Opry, and I got a picture to prove it.
Okay.
Yep. That's awesome. There wasn't an audience, and it was on a tour.
And I was with
him.
And Tracy was with me.
You can go around saying that. You don't even have to include that part. You played your harmonica, the Grand Ole Opry, and
I stood in the circle.
Yeah.
Where the original Ryman Auditorium, they brought over to the Grand Ole Opry and plugged it into the stage.
That's super cool. I'm nostalgic, so I think that's cool. What's it feel like when you step in the circle? Is it kind of like Victory Lane at Wilkesboro? Is that kind of the same feeling?
It's kind of like the goosebumps.
Yeah,
it's actually a different feeling. I mean, it's more like the goosebumps.
Yeah,
like
kind of thinking about who all has been in this spot,
in that circle. That's right.
Mm-hmm. All the history there.
Well, Brian, you can go back and rewatch.
I'm typing it now.
Yeah, go back and rewatch. And I was trying to think if somebody else had a number comment. Yeah, we were talking about the 2002. All right. Please tell us how you met Tracy and how did you get so lucky?
Yeah, tell that story because I always tell it, but I want to hear your version of it.
How did I meet you?
How did we meet? And how'd you get so lucky?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, we met on the playground in elementary school.
Seriously.
That's true. I know. I had forgotten it. I was thinking you were going to be like, I forgot about that. Y'all have known each other for a very long time, actually.
We didn't know each other. We never spoke.
Well, Sonny, about 45 years
way
ago.
Way back.
We were playing on the playground.
Actually, it was 45 and, years ago.
Yeah, it was 45. And I was just a young 6-7 years old.
Okay, tell the rest of the story.
And then years later, I was working in NASCAR. I was working at Robert Yates Racing or Roush Yates Engines. And this guy named Dan Thompson was working there with me. And so I saw pictures of him with Tracy. And I was like, wait a minute, I know this girl. I've seen her. I've seen her my whole life. I remember.
You got a caller calling in?
And so.
This one, I don't know.
Okay. Hello. Nope. It's messed up. Let's try this number here. Nope.
Whoever was calling, are you still there?
No, I think maybe something's messed up with the phone lines or something. Okay.
Because you answer, I'm hearing sort of an echoed version of us.
Yeah. That's it.
Right. That's blinking now, so you may want to try it now.
Yeah,
I'll try it one more time. Hello? No.
That's still us, yeah.
Yeah, there's something going on. All right. But whenever I saw those pictures of Tracy with Dan Thompson, and I thought, wait a minute, is he married to her? And I said, no, wait a minute. Her name has always been Thompson. So I thought, and you know what? They kind of look alike in a way. And then, so I just put two and two together, did a little digging. And then I asked Dan about her. I said, hey, is that your sister, Tracy? I said, yeah, we went to school together. I mean, I've known her my whole life. I've lost track of her through, you know, she went to two different elementary schools with me and in middle school. But in high school, we didn't go to school together.
All right, we're ringing again.
Okay.
Hello, caller.
Hey, this is Nick Ramey.
Hey, Nick Ramey, how are you?
Good. I wanted to call in and pick on Dave there a little bit.
All right. Well, we are talking about how we met, but...
I heard that.
Yeah.
man. Hey, Nick. How you doing, buddy? I got your text, but I guess you figured it out.
Yeah, I finally figured it out. I remember I had your number on there.
Oh.
You know?
Yes.
Still on my deal, so I called that. So that's how I got hold of it.
Yeah, very good. I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
So what you want to say to Dave?
Oh, man, I tell you what, we kind of go back a long ways. We used to travel together, and we've worked together, and done a lot of cool stuff over our careers.
I was talking about you earlier, Nick. Did you hear that? I was saying that whenever I probably should have made that jump over to Robert Yates many years before, and I believe you probably mentioned it to me, and then I was just kind of – maybe I didn't feel like I was quite ready for that. At Robert Yates Power yet.
Yeah, that was probably back in our traveling days, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And I was also intimidated by how many hours y'all were working and all that kind of stuff, you know.
I think there was a lot of people intimidated by the hours that we worked because we didn't quit till we were done. I mean, and we might not get done till 12, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it was a lot, but paid off. That's the way Robert and Doug were. You know,
when you got, yeah, man,
you did it.
Yeah, when you got them staples, it was worth it, right?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, when the Staples were coming and Mr. Richard was coming to see us on Friday, it was definitely worth it, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you experienced a whole lot more than that than I did, but we were talking about the bonus checks, the Staples.
Their checks. I was right there with you.
Yeah.
Didn't you get bonus twice a year?
Well, that was the bonus. That was the Ralph Yates bonus.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that I ended up getting. I might have experienced it a little bit there in 2003, but before that, they were getting the bonuses for the win, top three.
Yes, and it was like we would either win, finish first, second, or third. So it's like we got a staple. We got an extra check almost every week. It was just incredible back in the day.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Mr. Richard was the most liked man on the whole team because he would come visit you every Friday.
Yeah, even Ernie Irvin, when he called in that time, he was saying he was looking forward to the Staples.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty awesome, wasn't it? We had a lot of fun back then. We worked hard. And not only that, we worked hard for a lot of years, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. 8 days a
week. You were a great guy to work with. And I've loved every bit of it, you know, working with Doug and Robert all these years. We got a lot of stuff done, built a lot of engines, right?
We sure did, man. The days that they put you in there with me, they were the best days of my career when we worked side by side every day.
Wearing the matching Hawaiian shirts.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I can't believe Doug would even let us do that. He let us wear those Hawaiian shirts on qualifying day.
Yes, and it worked too, though.
It did. It worked very well. It was pretty impressive. Doug's like, hey, you got your shirt today? It is qualifying, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so that's some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
So Dickie wants you to tell a David Hamm story.
A David Hamm story?
Yeah. One of your best David Hamm stories.
Oh my gosh.
He said a moment in history.
This is still a story.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of them. I mean, we just... We did a lot of stuff. We worked together a lot. We traveled a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
We had to get on the airplane at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
Yeah, down in Charlotte.
Yeah, at 5 o'clock in the morning. That's pretty tough. That's a long day.
And then after Nick and them would win the race, they would have to tear down the engine after the race. So we would wait.
Yeah.
We'd be waiting on them. To get back
we weren't the most liked people at that point because we were always late.
Yes.
So when we were late, we were always holding up the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd get there and David would be all mad because we're holding up the plane like, man, we got to go. I got to get home.
I got to get home.
He's always been in a hurry.
No, here's what I would do. I'd fill up my little trash bag. It was called, what did Sterling call that? A redneck cooler.
Yeah.
I'd take a trash bag and some ice and then throw the beers in there. And then that's what I would hit, sit on the bus and just hang out and just wait on y'all. Drink a few beers.
Yep.
And then I'd just pass out by the time I got to the airport.
Yeah.
Get on the plane. Yeah. I was like, all right, nap time. That way I can be good when I get back to the airport.
Yeah, because they gave you breakfast, right? As soon as you ate breakfast, you were gone.
Well, I wasn't drinking beer with breakfast. This was even.
No, I mean, in the mornings.
Yeah, in the mornings they did.
You said you get up at 5 on the plane at 5.
Yeah, we would get our, what was it, a broccoli and cheese omelet.
Oh, my gosh, that was terrible. I'm not a veggie guy anyway. You know that.
Nikki's nothing green.
Ah.
Nothing green.
Yeah. So pretty much I was starving to death.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
Take your goodie bag.
Nick was probably like, you got one of them omelets without that green stuff in there?
yeah. Can you scrape that out of there or something? Yeah. Those are some good times, Dave. We had a lot of fun, buddy.
Yes, it sure was. So the first day that I went to work at Robert Yates Racing, Nick Ramey had his office there, which ended up being our work area there for that year we worked together. But I remember going in there and seeing Nick, and I was so excited. And Nick was my new boss, basically, right? And after all the years we'd already known each other, that was good stuff.
Yeah, they wanted to give me an office, but they didn't want to give me any room to work. And I'm like, no, I got to still be able to, put an engine together or something, you know.
Yeah, you did.
So, you know, so you still got to be able to mess with those engines, know what's going on, stay current, and, you know, and that's what we did. Man, we had an awesome group of guys there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No doubt.
A lot of talent.
Mm-hmm. For sure, man.
Yeah.
Well, and they were led by you many years, so.
Oh, we had a lot of fun. We had great guys. It was easy to take care of everybody. It was easy. It's not hard to keep people in line when you have that kind of talent.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty awesome. Well, I don't want to hold you up. I just wanted to call in. I know it's you got to be the guest of honor tonight, and it's always been an honor to work with you and having a great friend, and I just can't thank you enough.
No roasting tonight.
Yeah, thank you, Nick.
So, Nick, yes. Whenever they put you in the office with David, did they do it for you, or did you get to pick who you wanted?
I wasn't in the office.
Not office, but in the room, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It was like I had been out of a certain part of her for quite a while, and so the FR9 came back into play, and I came back in, and I had done the ARCA deal for a lot of years, and David got me back up to speed on the FR9. So, I mean, for me, that was huge,
mm-hmm.
you know. So he got me up to speed really good. But we spent about a year in there, didn't we, Dave?
We did, yes. Yep. And then they split us up.
Oh, I remember. Just, he was sad when you moved.
And it was like, well, shoot, now what am I going to do?
He was like, now I'm by myself.
Now I started getting to work late and, you know, everything else.
Yeah, we could get some stuff done. We got a lot of stuff done, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Sure did.
Have to come in, you know, Jeremy, get us all straightened out in the morning when we get there, you know. And you know how Jeremy is.
Oh, Jeremy.
Yes. Yes. good stuff.
Yeah, very good stuff.
Yeah, man. Well, thank you, Nick. Appreciate you,
all
brother.
Right, buddy.
Love you, brother.
Great talking to you.
You too.
Thanks, Nick.
It's been an honor.
Yes, sir.
All right. Same I'll for me. Talk to you guys later.
Right. Thank you, Nick.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, one of the greatest men to ever work in NASCAR racing right there, Nick Ramey. He's extremely modest. He's done so much, and he's worked at so many different places, worked with Richard Petty's and then worked with Davey Allison all the way through the Robert Yates years. And what more can I say? If you hadn't seen the show when he was on, you can go back and search Nick Ramey and DMIM Racing Roots, Nick Ramey. And it's a great show to watch, too.
So back to your story about how we met.
Yes, we met, let's see here. And then, I ended up asking your brother and he was like, yeah, that's my sister, you know, and just kind of kept walking. Like he wasn't really that interested in hooking us up or anything, you know. And I was like, well, what kind of issues does she got? I guess, I don't know.
Ooh, that's
what I
not
thought.
Nice.
Well, that's kind of what I thought. If he wasn't interested in talking about you very much, I was like, oh, shoot. I guess, but it was the way Dan is. I figured it out later on that's kind of the way that he is.
We're short and sweet.
Short and sweet.
Just like me and you had a conversation on the way home, and you asked me a question. I gave you my quick 2-second answer, and then you're still talking about it 20 minutes later, and you asked me, and I said, well, I already told you the answer. I said, I just
that's it.
Give the answer, and that's it, and I'm done.
That's all I get.
That's it.
I guess y'all got that from your dad, I'm assuming.
Well, I mean, you don't have to sit and fluff things.
Yeah.
Just get to the point and get it. Go That's to the true. Next subject.
Yeah. And he'll tell you exactly the way it is and what's on his mind, which is great. I like that.
So,
I appreciate that.
So you ended up sending me a message.
Oh, yeah. I sent you a message on the Messenger.
And
he slid in the DMs.
He was like, yeah. I remember you.
Yeah. You're pretty.
No, you didn't
say
that.
You got soft hair.
You didn't say you're so stupid.
What do you want me to say? I mean, gosh.
Somebody asked.
What did I
say? Scott asked.
Yeah, but they didn't ask all get in all those details. My goodness.
And how you got so lucky.
This is like the major part of the show. You're wanting to hear all this now.
Oh, stop it.
We can talk about that later.
I already know what happened.
You're just quizzing me now. This is where the roasting begins.
Oh, yeah. She's just trying to see what you know right off the top of your head.
Yeah.
Okay, next subject then, since it seems to.
Moving on. I'm just.
Yeah, exactly. Moving on.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So, if you want to be a young person aspiring to be a NASCAR builder today, James is asking that.
Well, that's a good question.
I was trying to get to it, but
I was sort of getting ready to get at that with young people trying to get in NASCAR in general. But that's a good area.
Well, and I'll tell you what I did, and this is what I talked about earlier. That I went into to become, I was eat up with it, basically.
You had that passion.
I had that passion. I knew what I wanted. I knew what I wanted to do, and I learned every single thing that I could learn about it. I mean, I eat, sleep, drink, breathe, whatever. Racing, engines, cars, because I didn't know which side I was going to get on, so I was doing everything. But once I got into the engine side, I did that with engine. I bought books. I bought one thing you can buy, the Smokey Unic book, the one, the Power Secrets. If you can also find, Waddell Wilson's book, that's a good book from 1975. You might have to pay a little bit more for that. And you can also find the engine blueprinting book. Anyway, buy all these books, read them, and then go take courses. Go to the technical school. I wouldn't say go to a four-year college yet. I mean, you can go get the smaller stuff out of the way. And then if you wanted to go into engineering, now there are a lot of teams hiring engineers nowadays. So if you wanted to do the engineer route, but there's a lot of engineers out there too. So you want to be able to do the actual work and know the engineering part of it. Then you'll be all around. Doug Yates is a good example of that. He can do both. Yeah.
So what is it that you miss about NASCAR?
I miss the camaraderie, the friends, the teammates, seeing the guys every day pretty much.
How do you think you would fare now with these 9-second pit stops? How do you think you would do?
Oh, I think I'd do just fine.
Well, no, yeah. I don't mean
I think
it like
so too.
That.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that you would be able to lower the time or?
What do you mean?
Like instead of doing it 9 seconds, do you think if you were out there doing it, you would be able to get it down to 8 seconds?
Well, I think I'd get down to 5 seconds. Is that what they're doing now?
It's
about 5 seconds, right? I mean, ain't it something like that?
I don't think so. I don't think it's that quick.
All right. Well, it used to be like a jack man. It was like 6 seconds to, drop a jack, get the other side up or something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah.
It was something like that. So I think that I would constantly strive to do better, to get it faster. And I would go out there and practice by myself and just run around and do it like I used to do. Why not?
Would you be willing to do a senior's pit crew competition?
What do you mean senior? Are you want me to go back on the road
50,
now or what?
You're 50 plus.
Hey, I thought about it. I thought about some of these truck teams might need somebody.
I'm not saying do it as a career. Yeah. I'm just saying doing it as fun.
That would be cool.
Heck, yeah. You could even let me drive.
Yeah.
So you're wanting to go back. You want to go on the road now.
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
No.
Well, Bryson's young. He's, 17, so he could be a driver.
Anyway. Mate, I would love to. If we only knew an engine builder, I would love to drive.
An engine builder.
Someone, let's put it this way. I'm interested in starting a race team. I'd love to drive. I wish I had someone that, has experience fabricating. If somebody around here would know a good fabricator, mm-hmm. would be cool.
That might come out of retirement.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And then also having someone that has, knows what they're doing as far as building engines, being on a crew and kind of doing that. I don't really know any of those guys right now, but, particularly maybe someone that's worked for, I don't know, Sabco, Roush, Yates, I'm looking for the big dogs,
Someone that can make the rules.
Might be able to help you out there. Huh? Is that what you're what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Let's put a late model together, Ham.
All right, let's do it.
I want to do the bumper cars.
Bumper cars.
Oh my gosh.
What are the demolition cars? Is that what they call them?
We just had that at Hickory this weekend, and not to get off topic too crazy, but those are fun to watch, but the track is pretty much destroyed after that. Yes.
Yeah. Are you reading comments, David?
Yes, I am. What was my favorite racetrack? Scott's asking. It was, I believe Talladega. I like Talladega. It's probably, yeah. Something about it, the drafting and all that stuff. I always liked the speed, of course,
You're laughing because you read the second
part of that. Yeah, the second one. I didn't want to get into that.
What was the last track you got lucky at?
We could ask Scott that question anyway some other time. And Mr. Ballard says, best podcast ever. I'll be your tire carrier. Yeah, there you go. Let's do that. Let's make it happen.
That'll be good. So far, we've got an engine builder, jackman, tire carrier, potential fabricator, maybe in Tracy's father.
Yeah.
And
he might come out of retirement.
Yeah, that would be great. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Cool.
All right. Have to have a big budget.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's the issue. All right.
Y'all realize what time it is now?
Yes, it is.
Time to wrap it up.
It's time to go.
Oh, but we don't want to go. David Hahn's got 5 hours more of stories.
Okay. Well, whatever. All right. Well, y'all, thank y'all for tuning in.
Yes, Tracy? I will do that. We want to thank Skip Pollard and Dan
Pollock.
Pollock. I did it again.
It's okay.
I wrote it down wrong.
Well, look, we both did it. I have Pollard on here. I don't know why we were thinking Pollard,
you're
but
probably
it skipped
thinking
Pollock.
Larry Pollard. Larry Pollard's been
probably
on the show.
Probably. Yeah.
I don't know.
We were
kind of rushed.
Yeah. IMSA. But we've got it. Skip Pollock.
IMSA.
Of Minnesota.
Of Old Timers, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, we want to thank them. We want to thank David Hamm for sharing his
Racing
knowledge,
roots.
Experience, yeah. stories, everything. We want to thank everybody that took the time to call tonight. This was a bookmark in history for us, for sure.
Yeah. Well, y'all hit that thumbs up if you liked this video, please. That tells YouTube that people liked it, and maybe they'll put it out to more people. We'll get more friends here tuned in. So, and thanks as usual, our usual listeners that tuned in, and some of the new ones. Thank y'all for tuning in as well. And hello to Stony Ballard's high school team, his high school class.
Yes.
And keep those history alive by continuing to watch these stories.
That's right. Tell your friends, and y'all will do good in school.
That's
Learn
right.
all you can.
Yeah, that's right.
Whatever your goal is, go for it.
And another quiz might be happening on the next show.
Yep. There you go. All right, thank y'all for tuning in. We'll see y'all next Monday. We got Blue Weber, who was a longtime employee for, actually, he wasn't at Hallman & Moody, but he was with Ralph Moody. So he's built a lot of engines, done a lot of machine work and stuff like that. So he's got a lot of great stories about Ralph Moody.
Awesome.
So I'm looking forward to hearing those. So y'all tune in then, and we'll see y'all next Monday evening at 7 o'clock for Racing Roots with Ham.